I was mentioning earlier that we did an event last night at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts, and at the conclusion of the event with Emma Donahue, it was which was great. It was just fantastic. But Emma got up and went over to sign books, and the crowd got up to get their books signed. And I just sat there, and I looked to my right, and I looked to my left, and I just saw that I was sitting amongst this beautiful bookstore, and I thought, this is just the greatest place on earth to be right now. Like, this doesn't get better than this. And we are blessed with so many wonderful independent bookstores who have been our partners for so long and have worked with us on this segment on Book Picks, and it's a delight to have two wonderful and incredible booksellers and from two incredible, wonderful bookstores with us this morning. Joan Grenier is owner of the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts. A pleasure to see you twice in a week.
Wow. Should we go for three?
Yeah, let's do it. I drove over there. You drove over here. So yeah. It's fair now.
So we have to meet in the middle.
Yeah, that's right. That probably would be good for both of us.
Well, thank you so much for being our conversation partner.
It was
with
wonderful.
Emma Donahue and
Emma
Joe Donahue.
Yes, we have the whole.
Even though they're cousins.
Yes, it was really great, and congratulations, and that was wonderful. We also welcome Cheryl McKeon with us from the Bookhouse in Albany, New York, one of my favorite spots, and it's a gorgeous independent bookstore, and of course, there's also Market Block Books in downtown Troy. Hello, Cheryl. How are you?
Hello. I'm very happy to be here, Joe. Thank you.
Well, it's a delight to have you on the program as always. All right, Cheryl, let us begin with you. What have you got?
Okay, I'm starting with a hardcover release, came out last week, Homestand, Small Town Baseball and the Fight for the Soul of America by Will Bardenwerper. And anybody who knows me knows that if I'm told that someone made a touchdown, I am likely to say, and how far was he from the basket?
Oh, boy.
But I'm very excited about this baseball book. The Homestand, Small Town Baseball and the Fight for the Soul of America is an excellent piece of narrative nonfiction. Journalist and Iraq War Army veteran Will Bardenwerper read of Major League Baseball's contraction of the minor leagues. In other words, they eliminated 42 small-town teams. And he asked, was this the set of values we as a country were fighting for? He calculated the savings would equal one major league salary. And his outrage led to a quest. Explore one town's relationship to its team and determine what America risked losing and whether there was any chance it might be saved. Thus began the author's summer. He was from Pittsburgh, and he came north in the summer of 2022 to follow the Batavia, New York Muck Dogs, get that straight, founded in 1897 in the town between Buffalo and Rochester.
Yep.
The author is unsparing in his disdain for the corporate takeover of baseball. But more notably, the book is rich with colorful feature writing. The gregarious, immersive journalist becomes friends with many of the season ticket holders, and that's at a $99 a season investment, including the octogenarian couple, lifelong fans from Batavia, and their two toddler great-grandsons. He travels to away games. The Muck Dogs meet the Elmira Pioneers, the Jamestown Tarp Skunks, and more, losing the season's final game to the Amsterdam Mohawks. He documents the Americana he worries will be lost in the fringes of the Rust Belt, the opening ceremonies, the thrill of being the bat boy, the college players who are delighted to pay around $1,500 a season for the experience and the privilege of playing baseball. He meets and introduces us to the veteran popcorn and hot dog purveyors. But he sandwiches the poignant with the harsh reality. Deindustrialization's impact on American communities and the corporatized ownership by billionaires who own teams for the privilege and the social capital. There's no denying this harsh reality and truth of the super-rich decimating still another factor of America, but you'll close the book with a happier memory. You'll think about the summer sunsets over the stadium fence and the camaraderie of a small town's shared loyalty to their team.
And want to go catch a game, right? Absolutely. Homestand is the name of the book. Small Town Baseball and the Fight for the Soul of America. Joan, you're up.
Well, I'm changing the subject by quite a bit. I'm going to talk about One Day Everyone Will Have Always Been Against This by Omar El Akkad. He will be joining us tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, and we're having such a big audience sign up that we're going to be across the street at the church, which might be news for some people because we just confirmed that. So Omar is an author and journalist. He's born in Egypt, grew up in Qatar, moved to Canada as a teenager, and now lives in the United States as a U.S. citizen. He writes fiction and journalism. He's a two-time winner of both the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association Award and the Oregon. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Oregon Book Award for fiction. His books have been translated in 13 languages, and his debut novel, American War, was named by the BBC as one of 100 novels that shaped our world. For many years, he was a journalist that covered foreign policy and affairs, including Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, and Gitmo. On October 25th, 2023, after just 3 weeks of the bombardment of Gaza, Omar El-Akkad put out a tweet, and I quote, "One day when it's safe, when there's no personal downside to calling a thing what it is, when it's too late to hold anyone accountable, everyone will have always been against this." That tweet was viewed by more than 10 million times. So this is partly a memoir and also a brilliant critique of Western liberalism and its utter indifference to the Palestinian suffering and the genocide, which, of course, last night there were over 400 Palestinians killed by the Israelis. So he details the contradictions of U.S. empire, where freedom and justice do not apply equally to all people. He makes a point of stating that what may not be obvious to some people, and I quote, that many of the Westerners doing the most active work in opposing genocide are Jews. This has always been my experience in Western Mass, where Jewish Voice for Peace has been very active and visible in calling for a ceasefire. It's a wide-ranging book of connected essays and provides plenty of food for thought. For me, it harkened back to another influential book, James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time, a type of manifesto that is important to reread and discuss. And
wow.
It's on the bestseller list.
One day, everyone will have always been against this, and there'll be an event tomorrow night right across the street.
The Congregational from the Church.
Congregational Church at the street. 6, 7?
7.
7 p.m.
Doors open at 6:30.
All right. Cheryl, next up.
Okay, I'm kind of bending the rules, but
I'm
going to go for it. I've got three works by one author I'd like to talk about. And I don't know if Joan has experienced this, but as booksellers, we are so often asked, have you read this? And we have to say, well, no, but we've read four other books. But there's still the guilt still weighs heavily.
Yes.
I had never
like,
read
it. Like, why haven't you read it, right?
Exactly. You know, no hate. But I have felt badly that I hadn't read Americana. So the 10th anniversary paperback came out of Americana this year by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. Please remember that. I'm not going to say it again.
Okay. That's very good.
But,
congratulations.
I finally read Americana. It was absolutely, absolutely enthralled. It's such a beautiful book. And then just a couple of months later, her next book, Dream Count, came out. Americana was so enthralling. I thought it was going to be a heavy and a sad book, but it's a delightful book. Lots of lessons, lots of truth, but mainly beautiful writing. It's the story of smart, strong-willed Nigerian women, one named the hero, named Efemelu, who, after she leaves Africa for America, endures several harrowing years of near destitution before graduating from college, starting a blog entitled Race Teenth, or Various Observations About American Blacks, Those Formerly Known as Negroes, by a Non-American Black. She has such a sense of humor. Even when she's talking about very serious topics, her characters have a wonderful sense of humor. She wins a fellowship at Princeton, as Adichie did. She has acknowledged that many of Efemelu's experiences are her own. Her discovery of America and her constant struggles with its excesses and contradictions, not to mention her pledge to stay true to her roots and not become an Americana, or one who returns to Nigeria haughty with the experience. She reunites with her childhood sweetheart, Obinze, in Nigeria, so Americana is a love story, but it's also memorable for Adichie's glorious writing, humor, and her depiction of race, identity, and immigration. So Dream Count comes along, and there are common threads between Americana and Dream Count, which is part of the delight of reading the new book, which has only been out, I'd say, about 3 weeks. It goes back and forth. It is about four interlinked women who know each other, they're related, or they're friends, and the story travels among Nigeria, London, Maryland, and D.C. It's definitely a story of women's experiences, including the unique physical ones, from lovemaking to childbirth to motherhood to assault. Men are secondary characters. They elicit minimal attention or sympathy. I dare say that one could open Dream Count to any page, not knowing what was going on, and savor the writing without knowing the plot. I also listened to this in part on Libro FM. It's a cast of four readers. It's a marvelous experience, wonderful accents, and it really puts you there. Now, I said there were three, and I went back, and hooray, it's Women's History Month.
Yes.
So who doesn't need to mention we should all be feminists? I've loved this book. I've put it in so many hands. I've displayed it conspicuously in at least two stores where I have worked, including Book House. And it's just an essay based on a TED Talk. And the way it's most often described is, it's a book we need to give to our daughters. More importantly, we need to give it to our sons. It's a short book, and it talks about women, about the way women should be in the world. In Sweden in 2015, a women's group gave a copy free to every 16-year-old.
Wow.
I love that.
That's really great. Wonderful. So Americana, Dream Count, and We Should All Be Feminists. Terrific. Joan.
Next is Alice Austin. This is her first novel, but she is a playwright and a producer. She also studied creative writing with Seamus Heaney at Harvard, where she was receiving her law degree. So not a slouch at all. But she did live in Brussels, and the name of the book is 33 Place Brugman. I don't know if that's Place Brugman, but anyway, it's spelled Place. And this is during the Holocaust in Brussels, and all the people who live in the building, there's residents of 8 apartments, they narrate different chapters. So we get to know all of them. Some of them are friends, others just say hello in the hallway. But after their lives are changed as the Nazis occupy Brussels, there are a lot of changes. Who can trust becomes a life or death situation, how to survive when rationing reduces the options for food, another question. A Jewish family disappears in the middle of the night. The father, an art collector, only leaves behind frames. What happened to the artwork? Other young men join the resistance. Alice Austin's storytelling is superb as tensions build during the Nazi occupation. Despite the constraints of the situation, their lives go on. Lovers meet and marry, art is created, and the resistance grows in small and large ways. The points of view of the various occupants of 33 Place Brugman are masterfully interwoven, which makes the story even more interesting as the reader pieces together the transformation of the characters and the decisions they're forced to make. This was an indie-introduced selection, so independent booksellers across the country chose it, and it was just published on March 11th.
Alice Austin is the author of 33 Place Brugman. All right. Is that right, Brugman?
I don't know. I haven't heard anybody say it.
All right. Well, we'll be the first.
Yeah.
Okay. Cheryl.
My next is Wild Dark Shore by Charlotte McConaughey. Now, have an afghan or sweater ready when you're reading this book. You're going to travel to Shearwater, a tiny island near Antarctica, where a widower and his three children are the last inhabitants. They're caretakers of the Shearwater Global Seed Vault that will assure future crops globally. They've been there since the youngest child was a tiny baby after his mother's death, and they love and respect their home among the seals, the penguins, and the whales. They take their job very seriously to protect what could be the sole source of food for future generations. But the permafrost is thawing, and sea levels are rising. And during a particularly violent storm, a woman washes ashore. Is she even alive? How does her fate juxtapose with the salt families? This is a fast-paced and a deeply emotional novel of trust and love, family devotion, anger, and the undeniable crisis of climate change. Nonetheless, it remains hopeful. One review said Wild Dark Shore moves at a blustery pace.
Very, very cool. All right. Joan.
Isola by Allegra Goodman, which is a historical novel. It's based on a historical figure, but very little is known about her. But her name's Marguerite. This is the 16th century in France. She's an heir to a large fortune and grows up in a manor house surrounded by luxury. However, she's an orphan. And as an orphan, she is completely subject to the whims of her kinsman, who has been appointed her guardian. And he is one piece of work. He's a nasty guy. So he forces her to join him on a journey to New France. And it's hard to talk about everything that goes on in this novel because we want you to read it. But let's just say she, her lover, and a servant are abandoned on a deserted island in the Gulf of St. Lawrence. And so it deals with their survival, which is quite stunning. Allegra Goodman did a lot of research around building this story because there's not much known about Marguerite. So the conditions are very harsh. There's polar bears. There's not a lot of food. And I won't tell you what happens, but it is based on a real-life story, and they do survive for 2 years.
I don't want to give anything away, but the polar bears don't survive.
Okay.
She goes after those polar bears.
Yes.
It's so cool. It's grim, but it's cool.
And we have signed copies of this book. It was one of our first edition selections in January. And I just think it was amazing. It was just learning about the life of women, which they couldn't do very much, even though she was wealthy. She couldn't do very much. The guardian got to tell her what she could do. And he would go away for extended periods of time. So, you know, so it really gives you a sense of women in the Renaissance.
It's a beautiful novel. We did have Allegra Goodman on the book show. And if you want to go back at WAMC.org, you can find that. It's a really interesting interview, and she's fantastic. So. Next up, this is the 3-minute warning. Go ahead.
Well, it's only March the 18th, and I think that the soda bread is still fresh, and we can talk about an Irish novel. We have a very popular Irish display in the store, and on this display is one of my favorite books, published in 2019, When All Is Said by Anne Griffin. And it's one of those novels that pops into my memory, even though I read it when it published. The protagonist is 84-year-old Maurice Hannigan. The setting is a hotel bar in an Irish village. And over the course of one single evening in 2014, Maurice lines up 5 drinks and prepares a toast for each. He drinks Bushmills, stout, a bourbon, and his extended internal monologues are dedicated to the 5 individuals who have most closely shaped his life. That night, he says the things he should have said in person to the people he's addressing. It's a story of guilt, regret, and loss, with a little bit of skullduggery and a sense of foreboding. I have a very fond memory of this book. I had a Guinness in the refrigerator. I went out in the sun. This is when I lived in California. And I read this book in one afternoon, toasting Maurice in this thoughtful Irish novel.
When All Is Said, about how old?
It was published in 2019.
Oh, great. When All Is, that quaint time, 2019.
Yes.
When All Is Set.
You know, Joe, I'm just wondering why there isn't any Guinness for us here today.
No, I know. We had bourbon in the studio yesterday, but we don't have Guinness today. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm going to briefly talk about Nathaniel Ian Miller.
We have about a minute, but go ahead.
Red Dog Farm. It's set in Iceland. It's about a family with the mother, the father, and a 21-year-old son. Iceland is very much a character in this book. Nathan's first book, The Memoirs of Stockholm Sven, was a book that I just love. So go back. That's about Svalbard. He seems to like the Arctic area. He lives in Vermont now. And the father grew up on a small island that had to be evacuated because of a volcano. And then the mother is a Lithuanian Jew whose family had come to Iceland. And the son has a Filipina girlfriend. So there's a lot of discussion about a little bit about the immigration to Ireland. I love the book. And what
else? The name of the book
is Red Dog Farm. And there is a red dog. And he's a Kelpie from Australia. And there's quite a bit of description about cattle and how they give birth and how they poop a lot.
All right. Well, if sign me up. For more information, you can go to the website of these two wonderful bookstores, odysseybks.com and bhny.com. My thanks to Joan and Cheryl, who are just so wonderful. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you here. Thank you for providing our book picks.